By our houses, you will know us. That message became clear for writer and anthropologist Peter Nabokov and his partner, architect Robert Easton, as they began in 1978 to gather material about Native American architecture. For Nabokov and Easton, architecture is more than the design of a building. In their new book, Native American Architecture, they write that architecture embraces what happens whenever human thought or action makes order and meaning of random space. Naming places, designating sacred parts of wilderness, clearing village areas and garden plots, claiming food-gathering areas, and planning and constructing buildings. And it includes the often unseen social and religious meanings which are encoded into buildings. Like many boys growing up, Nabokov wanted to be an Indian. He turned a young boy's fascination into an adult pursuit.
I was about 6 years old when I was first aware of the existence of Indians, and about 10 when my stepfather's father gave me an arrowhead he found in northern Maryland, and about 17 when I went to live on my first reservation. And it's a fascination that, of course, gets rooted even more deeply any place you visit in the States and realize that, or North America for that matter, and realize that somebody else was there before you and their footprints still abide. And in some cases, in, you know, country enclaves or back hill hamlets, you find Indians still living, clinging in some cases to original acreage or in many cases to places where they've been removed to by the government.
Were you invited on? How did you approach a reservation to live on as an outsider?
Well, I was going to take any opportunity that came my way. The first time was an Episcopal work camp engaged. It was about six Anglo kids, male and female, and about six Indian young people at the Sioux Reservation in South Dakota of Cheyenne River, and we built a community hall in the space of about 2.5 months for this community, and it was a wonderful time. So it led to more similar experiences, and then I worked for the government for a while, and I was an adult education consultant at another place, and once I just threw a dart at the map and packed up a truck and started living in it on the edge of a reservation in East Texas.
And what did you find in East Texas?
In East Texas, I found a group of Creek Indians from the southeast who had been given sanctuary by Sam Houston, possibly because of his affinity for Indians through his, I believe, Cherokee wife. In any case, the Alabama Coushatta live on the Texas-Louisiana border today. So I found people speaking relative pure blood, speaking a very old form of the Creek tongue, all converted to fundamentalist Christianity, and very generous folks. And so I was kind of curious there as to how they could, on the one hand, seem what we would call so traditional, and on the other hand, seem to have so many attributes of regular Southern life.
How did you come to narrow down your field of study? I guess if I can call it narrowing it down, you might see as broadening it to specialize in the anthropology, the architecture of Native American dwellings and communities.
Well, I began writing about Indians in the early 60s after a summer and then subsequent summers on the Crow Indian Reservation. So I came into this as a freelance writer, having done a life history of a Crow Indian, a two-volume anthology of Indian-white relations as seen through Indian eyes, a book on American Indian techniques of running. And I suppose more specifically to answer your question about why narrow it down to architecture, really the question is turned around because architecture widens out to explore the entire world of a society. It proved to be a very useful, practically a conceit, a motif, a set of linked motifs that allow you to see an entire society through its own window, and it's a fascinating way to try to comprehend another people.
The role of the house seems very, it's important in all of our lives. The Pueblo Indians use the term "raising the house" in the sense of raising raising children, raising a family.
Yes.
How common is this amongst these groups that you've studied?
Well, in some cases, the sort of operative metaphor seems to be the house as body, the hugging bear teepees of the plains, where when you were inside one of these large buffalo hide structures, the arms and the legs of the of this ancestral supernatural bear seemed to be embracing all of the occupants. And of course, on the Northwest Coast, where you have these magnificent facade paintings and carvings, and in some case you will enter the house through the beak, which with the lower beak dropping down to provide a ramp for occupants, the symbolism, the imagery is very blatant.
Have you changed how you view your own house by living and studying with these people?
Well, I'm a pretty, or have been until recently, a fairly nomadic person. But I think that any place that I've lived, I actually learned more from Mexican Indians and Mexican village peoples than from American Indians about making sure that there's a shrine in the house. And I suppose I now, come to think of it, I always put Hopi corn over the threshold and sweetgrass, kind of as a matter of course. It looks pretty, and I think it probably helps. Jaime D'Angelo, a crazy California linguist, obtained a text from an Achimawi man who told him after visiting him here in Berkeley that he had first talked to his house before he even greeted Jaime and wanted to make sure, because he knew that the house was alive, wanted to make sure that the house would accept him as well as its occupant. And I guess you can't help but internalize some of that point of view. It's hard with prefab materials on occasions, but people can do amazing things to their houses and to their lawns, and you can learn to read how culture is inscribed in places with plastic deer or flamingos on the front lawn. This has opened my eyes to the cultural architecture of peoples far beyond native North America.
When you visit contemporary Indian communities, say, for instance, there was an example of visiting the Kwakutl in British Columbia where the custodians used your cameras to take pictures of the facade. You couldn't take the pictures. When you visited the home of a tribe in Florida, you were ignored by the people who lived there as you took pictures. What kind of reaction is there to outsiders when you come into some of these communities?
Well, I think I describe in the beginning of the book that this is the history of Indian-white relations, a power struggle told in architectural terms, and power and the loss of it and the legacy of colonialism, or the abiding continuation of colonialism, as the case may be, is the pervasive atmosphere of Indian-white relations. As a personal point of view, but I expect this. And I honor it. And I think you'll notice that many of the vignettes, the contemporary vignettes that climax the chapters of the nine culture areas of North America, do indeed end, many of them, with people telling us either to get away or to mind our manners or simply ignoring us. And I think it kind of comes with the territory of knocking on the doors of people whose architecture, by the way, not only whose cultural lives, but specifically whose architecture was targeted for extinction because it was considered to be disease-ridden, associated with the old style of life that was being suppressed under the name of white man civilization, education, going to boarding schools, and the like. And architecture fell under that, and Indians haven't forgotten it. So when somebody like myself and Bob Easton knock on their doors and ask to measure their houses, we never had the rudeness to do that, but essentially find out how they live within their interior space, they're suspicious. They want to teach us. They want to make sure we understand the full significance of the house, its role in their economic and their religious life, what it means to them. And in many communities, the only houses, traditional houses, that survive are some rendition of the old style of domestic structure, which has been converted into a religious building. So they are doubly interested in protecting its sanctity and telling us to mind our manners.